This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 328, brought to you by C2E2 and iFanboy members like you. iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 328. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hi, Josh.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Hi, Connor.
Hi, Ron.
Hi, Josh.
Hey, Ron.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. Hey, guys.
It's been too long. I missed you guys.
Oh, man.
I miss you guys.
Oh, my God. iFanboy.com is our website where we talk about comics as we like them and we read them, not necessarily in that order. Every week we read a bunch of comics and then one of us has the job of picking the one they're going to call the pick of the week. That's the one that's the best to them. It's a personal decision is what it is. They'll write about that and then we'll come here and we'll talk about it on the show and we'll talk about some other books from the week and maybe another topic or two. We try to cover a lot of things, but in a strictly regimented format. Before we get going, there's going to be I've been reading a lot of books to my son.
There's going to be spoilers.
There's going to be spoilers. A spoiler is what we tell you what happens in a book if you haven't read it. So if you haven't read it, make sure to read it before you listen, unless it doesn't bother you, and then you can just have fun. Ron!
You give a spoiler warning before every book you read?
Yeah, you should
spoilers!
Do
I'm going to be reading the book. There are spoilers in the story for the story itself. I feel like
I
that's the point
that
we're at now. That's
like,
the point we're at now with spoilers.
Yeah. Before I finish a book, I'm a little angry at the book for telling me what happens in the book as I read the book.
I know the gall, right?
Right. Ugh. Like this, what you know? But the thing was, I'm watching the Game of Thrones show. Total spoiler for the book.
You gotta be kidding me, really?
Yeah. I go back and read the book afterwards. It's like I know all of this stuff. Some of this stuff hasn't even happened in the book. It's gonna happen in later books.
Son of a bitch.
I know.
Why would they do that?
Well, they're hacks. That's the problem. They're hacks.
That's what the H in HBO stands for.
Yeah.
Hacks, bitch offs. FFFF number 16.
Yes, the pick of the week this week was FF number 16, written by myself. Well, no, I wrote the review. The comic book was written by Jonathan Hickman.
This is biased.
And it's got art by Nick Dragota and Steve Epting. And it's interesting because I'll admit this week was a matter of inches between several titles that I could have gone with for pick of the week. But you know, as always, I go with my heart and I go with my kind of my emotions, and the book that I found myself smiling the most during and really enjoying the most was FF number 16. And I thought it was interesting because I kind of realized, and I wrote about this a little bit in my review that you can read on ifanboy.com, that I really like the wrap-up issues.
Oh yeah.
I like you've got this big thing that happened, and then everything, you need an issue to decompress and breathe. And going all the way back to my old X-Men Claremont days, my favorite issues were I loved Extinction Agenda, but I love the issue after it when they're all back at the mansion and they're just like, God, what the fuck just happened? Right?
Because they didn't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Rick's no one knew.
Yeah. And that was actually the issue when, I won't get into it, but that we've talked about it before, the Jean Psylocke in the women's locker room panel with the steamy shower. Anyway, so.
How old were you when you read that?
It was like 13, 14.
Old enough.
Oh.
Old enough. So
that's three.
So FF16 is the kind of the decompress, the exhale issue following the events of Fantastic Four 604, which pretty much wrapped up Jonathan Hickman's 2+ years epic storyline.
And that was the pick of the week also. So we've had two
wins. No, 603 was the pick of the week. 604 wasn't.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I went back and checked.
FF number one was.
Yeah.
You keep talking and I'll look up.
Okay.
That.
But anyway, so this kind of wrapped it all up. And it's kind of funny because after that big, enormous cosmic level, Celestials, Galactus, Kree, Inhumans, Negative Zone, all this stuff, all this shit that got thrown at it, like, how do you do that epilogue issue, that wrap-up issue? And I thought it was great because it had a whole lot of kind of everybody kind of talking to each other after what just happened, and then a whole lot of cleaning up.
Yeah, there was, actually.
Like, I thought, and that was the thing that made me laugh, which was like, and what makes Fantastic Four special, and what's always made Fantastic Four special, is that, you know, yes, it's this amazing, outrageous, ridiculous kind of, not ridiculous, but like, you know, mind-bending, dreamscape kind of, you know, big ideas and that sort of thing, but at its core of it, it's the heart of the family, the Fantastic Four, that's at the middle of it. And what I think what's Hickman's done really well about this, and you know, and maybe this is, you know, similar to Jeff Lemire on Animal Man, with his work with the Animal Man and his family, with Buddy Baker and his family, I think Hickman has really tapped into that family dynamic within Fantastic Four, not only amongst the four main characters, but by expanding it, including the children, adding Spider-Man, including all the Future Foundation, and you've got this. You took what has been for what 50 years a book full of heart of these four people that make up a family, and Hickman was able to increase that heart and spread it out amongst 13 people. Which I think is really an important aspect to this, and sometimes gets, you know, when people don't understand why Fantastic Four doesn't work, I think it's because when it lacks that kind of that heart. But yeah, so this issue was, you know, takes place immediately after the events of it, and you also get narration by Valeria, who, if you ask me, if you look at Hickman's entire run, even with the Council of Reeds and all the stuff and Johnny Storm dying, the star of this book for Hickman has been Valeria.
Yeah,
that's been the true character that he's zoned in on and said that this is the one you know, the you know, this is the character that, that I'm going to use to drive through the, my, this story. So,
is he positioning her as a villain?
I don't know. Possibly. Spoiler. Yeah.
It kind of seemed like that. I mean, she's kind of dark in this issue. She's narrating and she's the star, but she's also kind of very angry at everyone. Her future self is kind of bitchy.
Yeah.
And you get the feeling that she's not quite on the same page as the rest of the team.
Well, what's interesting is that it's because it's a childish reaction.
Right.
Because she didn't, you know, because she manipulated, she maneuvered, she did all that stuff. She, in her head, she made them win the day, but it's Franklin with a beard who's getting all the credit, and when they get home and after they finish cleaning up, she's still grounded.
Yeah.
Because she kept secrets and things like that. So yeah, maybe in that last kind of conversation where she says she promises not to keep secrets, like I don't believe that for a second.
Oh.
You know?
This issue was fantastic.
This was great, wasn't it?
Like, and I just talked about that like she was a real person. I didn't, for a second. Like no, I didn't just gotten out of a meeting.
All I want in life now is for a complete omnibus collection of his entire run, including both books, yep, in order that they should be read. This is wonderful.
Yep.
And the things he's able to do in the last 2.5 years, all of the threads or the balls in the air, whatever metaphor you want to use, that he's kept up until this last couple of issues has been incredible.
Yeah.
And it's all come together, and it's dramatic, and it's funny. You've got Galactus and Franklin Richards as eternal cosmic buddies, which is kind of
I totally want that buddy movie with the two of them.
And then you have you end with a great cliffhanger of Dr. Doom discovering the Infinity Gauntlet, which is, you know,
yeah, I didn't even mention that, which is the last 4 pages of it is Doom, you know, because we thought Doom was left for dead on the time birth, you know, with the bridge, but we see that he was able to survive and that Valeria kind of left him a hint that there's something for you, and it's 2 Infinity Gauntlets.
Yeah.
which is badass. And what I love is the last line, which is just, here, I can build. Yeah. And then you turn the page and black and the Parliament of Doom. Like, talk about a great title. Like, it's just, oh, it's, what I find amazing is that even after finishing this big epic story, he's setting up stuff that I still want to read. I want to read more. Which is how you do it, which is great. And then art wise, Nick Dragotta, I said in my review, he's the kind of guy where I feel like every couple of years we're like, oh man, Nick Dragotta.
Yeah.
You know, and it just the acting and the facial expressions on some of the folks is mainly Valeria, the little scowls and the eyes and stuff like that.
He does great expressive eye work, yeah, especially on the women. They get these really sort of dark, very accusatory eyes that are wonderful.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it just was really, really top notch and really like a good way to wrap things up. And we get a new Baxter building with would have killed them to do a cutaway. Would have killed them. And then they also
do more circles.
They address the issue with FF not knowing who everybody is. By now, everybody has a number, so we just need a list of everyone's number and who they are. And so
like
now,
you need a scorecard.
Yeah. So blonde guy number 7 is
So they have new uniforms. The FF have returned to the. They're still wearing white, but they got the 4 on the chests again, which they haven't had since they became the Future Foundation. The kids all have different numbers, like they're at a baseball team. It's fun. It's just everything about this is fantastic.
Yeah, it was just great. I mean, it's just great, and it just shows how this is going to go down as like Hickman. Not only did he stick the landing on it, but he nailed it. Totally nailed it. I thought. But that's just me. I don't know.
Did this book sell?
What?
Did this book sell well?
Yes. Yeah. No. My God. What happened was that it's like one of Marvel's top books now. It like doubled what it was originally selling. And wow. Then when it moved to FF, when Fantastic Four came back, both books stayed at the same level.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's really amazing.
Yeah, no, it's really, really amazing. So, I got to tell you, though, if I was picking pick of the week based on covers, I sure as hell wouldn't have picked FF16. I would have gone with Daredevil number 10.
You tell me if there's a better cover,
jeez,
that you've seen this year.
And this was not only is this a great cover, but this is a great issue.
Well, let's talk about the fact that there was the Mole Man apparently is incredibly athletic because he went toe to toe with Daredevil in a ninja fight.
Yeah,
for like pages.
What was great was the first page where they fight at the bottom of the page when Mole Man comes at him and yells "Don't taunt me" and hits him with a stick. The way it was drawn, I felt like it wasn't just one hit. I felt like it was a bunch of little hits, like whack, 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 whack.
You know what this was like? this was like, and I know it wasn't really a standalone one and done, but this felt like one of those Paul Dini detective issues. Because like as I'm watching Mole Man jump around, I'm like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like it was ridiculous in a way that actually Marvel Comics haven't been in a long time. I was like, this is a straight up supervillain. Like he was using him in the old sense of supervillain, which you don't actually see all that often anymore. The sort of fun but misguided, you know, nobody took him seriously, blah blah blah. And they owned all that. They didn't try to modernize it and make it feel like it would fit in our world exactly. Right. And you know, at the end there's like a lesson, but it's ambiguous and all those diamonds are going to get stolen off of those gravestones in New York City
really within soon. hours
like in the time that it took you to flip to the next page, those fuckers were gone.
Yeah. I was super relieved that Black Cat didn't steal the hard drive.
Well, I like that they're setting up this relationship between the two of them, whether or not it's pursued at all or explored at all. At least it's there. That yeah. It's fun. It's sort of old Spider-Man-esque.
Yeah, very.
That's the thing that I kind of don't like, because I like that it was ambiguous that she did it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like if she did, then that relationship's over.
Right. Yeah. The thing was that after the last issue, I thought for sure she did it.
Well, the thing is though, if she did, then this is exactly the same relationship as Catwoman and Batman.
Yeah,
basically, it's the same thing. So you had to do it a little differently, I think.
Yep.
And she can't be the same character, but she, you know,
because the thing about Black Cat is that she's a thief and she looks out for herself. But at the end of the day, she won't cross that line, and she said it in here. You know, like she.
That's the difference between her and Catwoman.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, it was like the kind of thing where I read it, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad she didn't do that. You know, I don't know why, but
that safe is really badly hidden.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's really well hidden. Well,
to be fair, he's blind.
Yeah, yeah, true.
How well does he know if it's hidden or not?
Middle of the room. Even to access it, you don't have to move anything. It's right there.
Yeah. Well.
And it doesn't take much to knock a counter out.
Also, if you look at it, I won't get into nitpick, but if you look at the page after the graveyard at the bottom of the page when he first opens it, it's on a shelf and it shows the shelf. So the thickness of the safe has got to be like maybe 2 inches. Yeah, it just doesn't. Physics don't seem to work there.
The only thing that gave me pause in this issue was they're really sort of playing up the idea is Matt gone completely insane. They've dropped hints of it throughout the series, and now hammers it home in the cliffhanger.
But that guy was there. He wasn't insane. He was totally there.
No, was he or wasn't he?
I saw him. I see him.
Well, the cat knew about his thing. His Fantastic Four compact disc.
Yeah.
So that's real-ish, yeah. And she got hired unless. Holy shit, unless that whole thing's in his mind too.
Unless it's a Moon Knight scenario. So
no, I doubt it.
He didn't actually sleep with Black Cat. It was a very awkward pantomime.
I really liked the panel after the gravestones and Foggy going, you did good, Matt. He goes, I have my moments. I felt like that sums up this whole book so far. Like I feel like that was like to Mark Waid. You did good. Especially and Paolo Rivera too. Paolo Rivera, oh, so good.
By the way, Mole Man's necrophiliac. want to put that there.
Yeah, well, he just wanted to look at her.
Well, he was pretty close.
Yeah.
He got dead cooties. He got dead herpes, whatever that is.
But yeah, but that's so good. So good.
I don't know if you can be close with necrophilia. I think it's like a binary proposition where it's either you do it or don't.
I'm just looking at this cover, and
to be a necrophiliac, does there have to be penetration?
Yeah.
Well, there wasn't even fondling, was there?
No,
well,
he's nuzzling. I think it was pretty innocent.
He's cuddling.
Yeah.
Well, so you're telling me that if you cuddle a dead body.
Well, people do that all the time in movies. You know, they hold the body, scream.
Yeah, no. And they give that last kiss. And yeah.
That's right at that moment, though. This is This is much later.
Yeah.
This is, I've sent some people to dig her up and bring her down, and now she's here. I've set her up in my gallery.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a special moment together.
The thing is, she really ties the gallery together.
Yeah.
It's that last piece. The piece de resistance.
How can you blame him? He's been waiting a long time to find a piece that would tie it together. So he's pretty
happy. Her hair's been done. That was nice. She looks pretty good for having been in the ground for what I consider must be a considerable amount of time.
Well, this is disturbing. It's disturbing.
I don't mean attractive. I just mean that she's held up together.
Yeah. Let's move on to a much more less disturbing prospect in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
This book. At 95 issues, you know, it can have the problem of repetition of staleness, which does, it doesn't come up that much, but sometimes when you think about it, and I think that actually it's, it can happen a little faster with the live action version because you're getting bigger chunks of it at a time, I think. And we all know Rick really well by now. And I thought this issue was really fun because it finally sort of shows you Rick from somebody else's perspective. They find this guy and he's like, hey, we've got this great town and you should come by because you seem like good folks. And of course, they tie him up and treat him like a criminal. And, you know, basically like they did with all the people in the show, if you haven't watched it, if you haven't read it. And the whole time he's like, no, we're fine. And the guy brings him to the town and then immediately there's a ruckus and Rick does something. If you read this, you know what I'm talking about. Rick does something and you're like, ah, you did it again? And they all look at him because he killed somebody. And the last page of the thing is just him looking at the camera going, what? You keep killing people, Rick. You can't do this all the time. And, you know, one of the things that, that Kirkman has pointed out is that, you know, the book's called The Walking Dead. It's not The Rick Show. I think it'd be really interesting if they severely change things.
You think like issue 100?
Yeah,
we're getting close.
Just change either. I'm not saying kill off Rick, but change the dynamic because the dynamic's been the same for a really long time. You know, he's lost a hand and he's still in charge and he's going to keep going like this. Whether that's bad for sort of cross promotional marketing between the different things, but. I'd like to see consequences come out of the thing that's just happened here, like sort of long-reaching consequences. But it was a fun issue, and it was good. I like that we sort of saw a different side of it, and this book does a really good job at not necessarily treating the main characters like they're heroes all the time.
Now, the big summer event from Marvel kicks off next week with Avengers vs. X-Men number 1. We had Avengers vs. X-Men number 0 this week, which is the prelude issue.
And this, paired with Avengers 24.1, is the little mini-event I like to call Watching Robots Cry. Because I feel like that's all I read this week was Vision crying.
Well, let me talk about Avengers 24.1 first.
I just thought I want to point out we're talking about an issue 0 and an issue 24.1.
Yes.
They both include a robot crying.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I loved this issue.
Really?
This sort of harkened back to that Bendis that we used to get a couple years ago where he would just do one issue and focus on a character and explore it. It felt very much like that Civil War aftermath issue we did that was really good, that was better than the whole event.
Oh, yeah.
The Confession.
That was the best issue of the whole thing.
Yeah, this was the Vision. He came back recently in the pages of the Avengers, but we didn't really get much exploration of that. At least I didn't because I dropped the book immediately. Now he's in this issue. We basically take him from the time he's been reactivated to I guess the present day, where he's finding out what happened to Wanda. Wanda took control of him. The She-Hulk ripped him apart.
We're talking about Avengers 24.1.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I was on Avengers vs. X-Men. Okay. Sorry, I was like, "What are you talking about?"
So this is I really like this issue. We'll get to the next one in a minute.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great way to reintroduce you to the character, reintroduce him to the world. He has to make peace with She-Hulk, who ripped him apart. He goes and he confronts Magneto, who you forget is his father-in-law or his ex-father-in-law, and then they have a confrontation. And I just thought it was a great character piece.
Yeah.
And I love the Vision. So for me, I enjoy this a hell of a lot.
You love the Vision? I never knew that.
I do. I'm a love big classic Marvel Avengers guy, you know, the Vision Scarlet Witch team.
Yeah.
So I've always loved the Vision. This was a great sort of Bendis one-shot character piece. Avengers X-Men Zero was okay. I didn't dislike it. I didn't love it. I mean, it was a Zero issue. It was a catch-you-up issue. It was a catch-you-up with Scarlet Witch, catch-you-up with Hope. And I haven't wrapped my head around Hope. I don't understand her. I don't know what she does, who she is, what her point is. So for me, that was
Shall we do that now?
Sure.
Would that help?
Yes.
So unknown what her lineage is. We don't know who her parents were, but she bears a striking resemblance to Jean Grey.
They've been playing that card for like 5 years.
I know. Her power is that she can. She's like Rogue, but without needing to touch people or like killing them while doing it. So she basically if a mutant is nearby her, she can use their powers.
Right. I mean, I got that part. It's just to me, all I know of her was, is this Jean as a child or not? And now she's an adult and they haven't really resolved
it. No, I'm pretty sure it's not Jean. I'm pretty sure it's not, although they still never explained who her parents were, that she was part of that whole Alaska incident where she was the only baby left and she happened to be a mutant. Although, how do they know she was a mutant when she was a baby when mutants activate and then they're teenagers? But who cares? And that's the question, really. And the thing is that, like, what they're leading us to believe is so this kind of, you know, it doesn't confirm. We've had it confirmed for a while, but this, you know, it ends with the Phoenix Force. You know, it's coming for Earth. It's coming for Earth. And the assumption is that it's going to go into Hope, and Hope will become the next Phoenix. Whether that's the direction they go remains to be seen, because we haven't read it yet. I would guess that that's almost too obvious for them to do. So we're gonna talk about this a little later in the show, but not to get a little speculatively, but we got, you know, what, 6 months of Avengers vs. X-Men, so it's gonna be interesting to see which direction the story takes. So, this is an alright start. It just didn't, you know, it didn't super excite me.
Well, because I think it was very much a prelude. I think that was reflected in the lack of popularity on the website. It wasn't even in the top. It was the number three most pulled book, but you know.
Yeah. I think that's a lot
for an event that a lot of people don't seem to care about or say.
I think that was very low. If that was a first issue, it would have been a disaster.
Yeah.
I think the big
takeaway from this is that somebody just needs to keep Frank Cho from drawing Cyclops.
You hate it. I was actually looking at it during the issue going, Ron is hating this right now.
Oh, this is awful. I mean, I get he's playing up the slim aspect, which you can still do without making him look emaciated. Oh, and I just turned to the page where the Vision cries.
Yeah. Well, I thought overall it was
okay. Sad about? He doesn't know. He knows what was in the closet. He wants to know.
The Scarlet Witch tries – the Ms. Marvel and Spider-Woman try to bring Scarlet Witch back to the mansion. They open the door. Vision's standing
there.
Which
makes no sense based off of what happened in Avengers Children's Crusade, by the way. I'll go crazy.
Please do.
So they try to bring her back. Vision is standing there at the door with Beast and with Iron Man and with Wolverine. Apparently, they're all sitting at the door just waiting.
Waiting.
How long were they there? Jesus, where are they?
I love the reaction.
I ordered the pizza. Let me know if it comes. This is it.
No, I thought Frank Cho killed this story. I thought the Scarlet Witch story looked great. Yeah.
And so they have a confrontation. Basically, Vision says she's now no longer welcome in the family because she betrayed everyone, including him. And the biggest betrayal was taking over his body and using it against the Avengers. So he basically kicks her out.
How about that panel where he's telling her this is not your home anymore, and Tony and Wolverine giving each other looks?
Oh no, I love the reaction shots in the background.
Yeah.
But it was sad because, you know, they're Vision and Scarlet Witch. You don't like to see them.
Yeah, no, it's sad.
Even Tony says, I always liked them together. Yeah. So.
I want to see more stories about these characters who can't handle social situations and they just don't say anything.
Just look,
because they're really competent, like up against the president or a villain or the UN or whatever, and just like an awkward thing happens at a party and they're just like, I don't know what to do. Let's just have a good dip, huh? I don't want that.
We have to get out of here.
All right, so moving on. So the month of new Vertigo books continues with the new Deadwardians. And Paul talked to Dan Abnett about this on iFanboy Don't Miss earlier this week. I gave it a shot.
I'm surprised. Well, I'm not surprised.
Does not seem in your...
No, it's not. Oh, no, I won't be staying with it.
I barely even read it.
But that, no, I read it. But I'm not because it's, you know, it was bad. I thought it was actually quite good.
Sure.
It's not for me. So
I could have told you that from the title.
Yeah.
Just the title.
Well, did you like it?
I didn't read it because I knew I wasn't gonna even, no matter how, unless it was like blow my ass away amazing, which I would have heard about.
Yeah.
It's not my thing. Not my thing.
Wow. So you didn't even bother Vertigo.
I don't buy everything from Vertigo. I never have.
That's not what I heard.
This is a whole thing that you've made up.
No, I think you used to say you used to give everything a shot. I think we'll go back somewhere and find it out.
I would be more likely to give something a shot. But I wouldn't just try everything blindly. Now, on the other side of it, they have done a lot of stuff that I have not liked in the past 5 years.
Yeah, they have.
A lot of stuff.
They have.
There's that voodoo thing coming out that I don't have nothing to do with.
Came out already.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Connor, did you read this?
No.
No, so it's just me. All righty. Here, I thought we'd have a nice little discussion. No, I mean, it was good. I mean, it's a clever take on zombies in the British, you know, kind of Edwardian.
You lost me already.
Yeah, Edwardian age.
Zombies.
Yeah, it's got murder mystery kind of aspects to it. But it wasn't so clever or so unique that I was like, oh, I got to stick with it. So yeah, the new Deadwardians was good. And I'm sure it'll find an audience. Just that audience is not me. That's all.
Or any of us.
I gave it a try. Although I missed the dollar Vertigo number one program. That was nicer too. Yeah.
But I would probably pick it up if I heard really good things about it.
This might be a way for trade type thing to kind of see how it goes, see what it is, and then
if you want to see it, I wouldn't recommend that.
That's true. That's true too. But I like Dan Abnett. He's a good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. And so the last book we're going to talk about quickly here, not the last book, but another book we're going to talk about quickly here that was almost his pick of the week, very close, was Avenging Spider-Man number 5.
This to me is an early candidate for best issue of the year.
Well, I mean, it's a good issue, but it's total fan service. But that's not a bad thing. That's a bad thing. It's a really quality issue. And so it's honestly some of the best Lanil Yu I've seen in a while.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, the story of this issue is the Avengers are going on a mission, but first Spider-Man has discovered some old Steve Rogers art
that he was comic books.
When a kid, he made comic books. They get some of his original pages, and Steve is very embarrassed about it. And then this leads Spider-Man to realize that they have something in common because Steve was a little skinny art geek, and he's a little skinny science geek, and they had something in common which he never felt before with Captain America. So then he, very embarrassingly but very funnily, tries to buddy up with Cap on the mission, yep. And keeps appearing next to him at his shoulder every time Cap wants to talk.
And it just shows how good Zeb Wells is at writing Spider-Man. Yeah. Like he's
amazing.
Yeah.
And then Steve really doesn't want to deal with it, doesn't like talking about it, doesn't want to be involved. And then at the end, he sort of realizes that it's a part of him and he misses it. So he and Spider-Man start collaborating on a comic book. And it was just a great character piece between the two, showing a different side of Captain America, exploring that other pre-super soldier side where the thing about Cap is he was always Cap, just a skinny body. But there was also that skinny little kid, too, who had a different side to him, who was picked on in high school, and they bond over that. And it was just a really great sort of character piece issue. Yeah. One shot.
I did have to laugh at the end when Steve shows Spider-Man the comic pages he's been working on, and Spider-Man's first reaction is, "Whoa, went a little crazy on the cross-hatching." And he says, "Saw a lot of it online." That was the only thing that worked against it for me in my mind, is that it was very fan services, very insider, very that sort of, you know. But
it's a writer writing about writing.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's exactly. But that said, there were a lot of little touches in it that were great. The Lanil Yu art was like I said, some of the best, like better than Secret Invasion, I think.
This was gorgeous.
Yeah, it was really gorgeous.
The two-page spread with Cap explaining why he stopped doing art, and they show the war, and it was amazing.
Yeah, and it was inked by Jerry Alangulen, who is a legend in his own right, so that could have been a part of it as well. So, good, very good issue. So.
Yeah, if you like those characters, pick it up. It's a one-shot.
Yes, it is a one-shot. And if you like comic books and you want to pick up Avenging Spider-Man number 5, you probably could pick it up at C2E2, upcoming comic book convention in Chicago, April 13th to the 15th, at the McCormick Place Convention Center in Chicago. Is the pop culture event for the Chicagoland and Midwest area. So if you are anywhere near, if you're in driving distance, you should make the trip out, because you could see such comic book luminaries as Jason Aaron, Rick Remender, Mark Silvestri, Dan Slott, Tony Moore, Amanda Connor, Ben Templesmith, many, many
keep
others.
Going.
Cliff Chang, Dan Parent from Archie will be there. Neil Adams.
Keep going.
Ivan Brandon, Jimmy Palmiotti.
Come on down.
Kevin Maguire. The list just goes on and on and on. Nick Spencer.
Amanda Connor, I bet she's going to be there too.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, no, she is. She's totally there. So Ryan Stegman will be there. Scarlet Spider's Ryan Stegman. So if you go to c2e2.com, you can see the full list of people that are attending. And very few people have canceled so far, so that's always good to see. in addition...
How was that show? Not a lot of cancellations.
That's always fun. I mean, in terms of a little commentary in the comic book industry, like, it's always funny to see the announcements leading up to the con, and then as we get closer, the cancellations start. Like, Chris Somney's sick, so he's not going to Emerald City this weekend, and that sort of thing. But it's good to see not many people have canceled yet. But if you're
now appearing at the Phoenix Comic Con. Oh, wait.
If you're into more than just comics, if you're into the entertainment and that sort of thing, you can see John Cusack or Val.
Chicago legend.
Val Kilmer, who, and I got to tell you, folks. I got to tell you, go to c2e2.com and click on who's attending and click on entertainment guests and look at Val Kilmer's headshot, because it is legendary. Either he's cosplaying as George R.R. Martin, or I don't know what's going on.
Yes, a little. Does he have a little hat?
Yes.
Oh my God. That hat's bigger. It was wider than his shoulders.
Look at him. It's great. And what's great is that Val Kilmer's credit, like, they say who the people are, what they're from. So, like, Steven Yeun from The Walking Dead, or Nicholas Brendan from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Val Kilmer, They don't say Batman. They say The Doors.
would you put?
I would put Batman.
Real.
That's the first thing you'd put.
Genius.
Yeah. Well, no, but for this sort of con, would you put the Doors? Top Gun. Yeah. Anyway,
The Doors is fairly.
Yeah.
I mean, what would I put? I would put Tombstone. That's the best thing he's ever done, or anyone.
Anything's better than The Doors, right?
Yeah, that movie gets worse every time I think about it.
Yeah. But also, legendary Star Wars legend Anthony Daniels will be there from Star Wars, so you can finally see Anthony Daniels in the flesh, because I know a lot of you wanted to do
that. Don't forget James Hampton.
Yeah. What's great is they have John Cusack listed as a Chicago local. Why is John Cusack there? Anyway, so go to C2E2.com. You can buy tickets in advance. They're $50 for the weekend. They've got VIP packages. It's still time to get some tickets in advance. They've also got great mobile apps. You should check out on their website so you can get the full con floor and the programming schedule and all that fun stuff. And they've also got a shuttle schedule. So if you're in Chicago and you're trying to get to McCormick and you don't know how to do that, they've got shuttles that will take you there. So go to C2E2.com. And get your tickets today.
Don't forget the Vice President of World Events Productions is a featured guest as well.
what is going on? I know, yeah. And this picture is Lance from Voltron.
I know. For a second, I thought Lance was going to be there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I get excited.
Lance isn't real.
Yeah. So and let's not forget Teen Wolf James Hampton.
Yes.
That's not the hat that Val Kilmer, that George R. R. Martin wears.
It's similar.
No, he looks like the Shadow in this picture.
Oh, fair enough. Oh, .com will be there from 30 Rock. Why? What is going on? Anyway, all right, moving on. Back to the comic books. Uncanny X-Force 23 continued the awesome.
It wrapped up Otherworld, which is awesome. I think this was not a storyline that I felt very attached to.
Oh, but for me, they'd had the Siege Perilous.
Yeah, no, this is all up your alley, which is fine.
Merlin and Roma came back. Oh, this is X-Men Gold.
The thing is, like, not every storyline is going to be, you know, for everybody.
Yeah,
you know,
but what was great was that what's good about it is that it was four issues, so, you know, so it can move on. And it had ramifications. Like, a big thing happened between Betsy and Captain Britain, where Betsy had to take over Captain Britain's head and make him kill their brother, Jamie, who I've known has been a crazy, you know, deranged sociopath lunatic, and I was shocked to hear. I wasn't surprised to see that he was the ultimate villain in all this. Spoilers. Right. But and also I just realized that Merlin and Saturn are and the Siege Perilous were just a misdirection by Phantom X. But it still had the Siege Perilous anyway.
I like the art. I didn't love the story, but that's fine. It's you move to the next one. The next one Phil Noto's doing, which is exciting.
Yeah, which would be great. So
takes place in the '60s, and it's all just photographs.
But I didn't get to read Secret Avengers 24
because we're on the West Coast. Fuckers.
Well, spoilers. No.
We should explain quickly. There was a lot of diamond screw ups this week. A lot of books didn't get shipped to various parts of the country. So if you're in the West Coast, or if you're in the Southeast region, if you're in the Midwest, you might not have gotten a bunch of books, including this book.
I got all mine. So
good
suck
for you.
It. This issue was fun. Good discussion, interaction between Captain Britain and the Human Torch. I like the Human Torch's attitude quite a bit. But my favorite thing in this whole – and I'm going to read you the line. Basically, something bad happens to Beast, and he's out of commission, and he's in a cell with Clint. And Clint just basically apologizes to him. He said, "And I'm sorry I screamed at you before, okay?" And Beast, sort of dying, goes, "Not your fault. Overcompensating for never being seen as A-list." And I was like, there it is. You know Hawkeye. That's it, exactly. The beast is completely aware of what, and it made me laugh a lot, and it was my favorite panel of the week.
Cool.
That's all I had to say about that.
I thought I had to check to see if locusts were swarming and if hell had frozen over, because I'm holding Choker number 6 in my hand.
And good for you.
Yeah. So it's good to see that finally Ben McCool and Ben Templesmith were able to finish the series that they started, that finished what you started. And it's if you're into Ben Templesmith, it's what you would expect from his art style. Look good as usual. Didn't know what the hell was going on. Thank God they had it previously so I can catch up. But it ended all right. And it just I think it's more the fact that it ended. So
for me, this is the problem. I'm like, it's a two years between issues, and yeah. I couldn't tell you one thing about except that it involved a cop. Yep. And so that's a problem.
Is that really 2 years? I thought it was 1 year.
started 2 years. The series started 2 years ago. It was a 6-issue miniseries. Started in 2010, so it was probably about a year. Because there was a lot of delays in between. It just 6 issues over the course of 2 years is rough.
Yeah, no, agreed. But at least it finished. So, there's an Infinite Horizon ad on the back cover, which I thought was funny.
And an ad for Fell.
Yeah, no.
Here's your warning. We got 4 issues. Well, 3 issues after this of Scalped left. We'll probably mention all of them.
Yeah.
Not a lot necessarily, but deal with it. I thought that the best character in comics was going to off himself in this issue. But more importantly, Connor, I was right. It was Diesel.
You were right. You were right. Okay. I'll pat yourself on the back and we'll continue. For me, even though I've known it, this is the issue that really it sunk in where I think this is going to end badly for everyone.
It was a nice feint because basically the last issue, like, hey, everything will be cool. I just, again, character work wise, sort of interactions, the conversation between Dash and Officer Falls Down, really, it's just like a really interesting conversation, sort of loaded with all sorts of unsaid things. And it's going to be ugly. It's going to be really very ugly. And I can't wait for that. If you're going to give it any criticism, I think it's really interesting how strongly Red Crow reacted to the news that was supposed to put him over the edge against Dash. Because it doesn't even seem like it has that much to do with any of Dash's decisions. Because he wasn't involved.
Well, when you're talking about grandchildren and stuff, it tends to get emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was you got that Hell's coming with them moment at the end of the very last thing, and it's going to end badly for everyone.
Yeah.
Except for us.
All right.
Ron, I was on board for Profit. I was on board for Glory, but Bloodstrike was a bridge too far.
Yeah, well, Bloodstrike number 26, the next book in the Extreme relaunch, is probably the one closest to the original vision of Extreme. The one close, whereas Profit and Glory have been a bit of a departure. But this is Tim Seeley writing and with art by Francesco Castan doing pretty much just, taking the concept and running with it.
Bloodstrike is what you're saying.
Bloodstrike, yeah. So this issue focused on Cabot Stone, and we kind of caught up with him. I thought it did a good job of explaining what Bloodstrike was and where it came from and all that sort of stuff. And it's setting up him getting a new team. But yeah, it's very. So if anybody's complaining that Profit and Glory weren't enough like Liefeld's books, here you go, Bloodstrike. They got you covered. So
if you read Bloodstrike 25 and you're like, God, where is that next issue? Like, it's here.
Yep. So, and I love Bloodstrike because of the Rub the Blood. I wrote about it in the Light Week, but yeah, just the Bloodstrike was one of my favorite Liefeld ones.
I didn't know that that was a real thing.
Oh, it was
a totally
real thing. It was great.
I thought that was a joke you made up.
No. The first issue of Bloodstrike number one was a gimmick cover, and they had heat sensitive red ink over a photo of the team of Bloodstrike, and the red ink looked like blood. And if you touch the ink, the red would come up, would get redder. And in the upper left-hand corner on the image logo was the words, Rub the Blood. Just, it's great. it's possibly one of the greatest marketing terms ever in comics. So, yeah.
Rub the Blood.
Yeah, Rub the Blood. So, anyway. So, those are all the books that we read, enjoyed, and that sort of thing when we do our weekly comic thing. And you read and enjoyed your comic books as well. Go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can get the pull list, and you can add books to your pull list and come back and rate and review and make your pick of the weeks. And counting down the top 5 pick of the weeks, coming in at number 5 is Atomic Robo Presents Real Science Adventures number 1 with 4.2% of the pick of the weeks.
My light week. Yeah. Recommendation. It was fun.
Yeah, it's great. Good indie book. Great indie book. Yep. Coming in at number 4 is Daredevil number 10 with 6.1% of the pick of the weeks. So some love for Daredevil. Not surprising. Coming in at number 3 is the iFanboy pick of the week, FF number 16 with 10% of the pick of the week's dispersion. And number 2 was The Flash number 7 with 18.1% of the pick of the weeks. And the number 1 book agrees with Connor, Avenging Spider-Man number 5, the community, 38% of the community gave it their pick of the week.
It's a plurality.
Yes.
I like it when they're spread out like that.
Yeah. So why was The Flash so loved? That was my question.
Well, Dix wrote in and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And the pick of the week percentage is 18.1%, like we said. And he said, okay, I'll admit it. The Flash number 7 was a pleasant surprise. The plot is moving at a good pace. The implications of Barry's time-shattering powers are becoming clear, and maybe there will be good storytelling. The immediate plot with Captain Cold is given the amount of time it deserves, which is to say, frankly, not a lot. And Patty Spivot, Barry's current flame, gets to be center stage for a little while. I do still have issues with the way that this title handles characters. Most of the supporting cast seems to exist around the Flash, not with him, since they don't cross paths much in or out of the costumes. Heck, it's hard to even accept that these are people Barry knows, since they never seem to be around him, or rather, he never seems to be around them. But they talk about him an awful lot for some reason. The art is, as usual, incredible. There's really some superb layouts in this issue. Just, heck, it's exciting to just look at the Flash. It just is.
I would agree. I mean, but the art part, it's exciting. It's still... Yeah.
Well, the thing about the Flash has been a little short for me. It's just come up. I've really enjoyed it. I love Manipul's art. I love it's great. But it's a very good book. I think I would give this issue a 4, you know? But it hasn't been great. And I don't know if I have too high expectations or what, but...
Yeah. You've certainly built it up for yourself a bit.
That's for sure.
I think showing the consequences of his powers is a good thing. I think introducing Grodd is a good thing. I think this is a step in the right direction.
I agree. I do agree.
It's one of the better issues.
Yep. Especially after the Mob Rule thing, the clone dude and all that sort of stuff. That got a little...
That went on a little long.
Yeah, it did. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Akamu reviewed Ghost Rider number 9. Give the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And 0.3% of them, made their pick of the week. Of them. Akamu said, Ghost Rider is a... I was making fun of myself there. Ghost Rider is a title that I never really delved into. I'd pick up on an issue here or there, not be engaged by the story, put it down, move to another title. Even when Ghost Rider appeared in other comics I was reading, I find myself zoning out at the mention of the Spirit of Vengeance. So I found myself a little surprised that I was not only finished this issue, but enjoyed it. Williams' take on Alejandra, Johnny Blaze, and Mephisto, as well as a cameo from Doctor Strange, did the improbable and made me care about Johnny Blaze, Doctor Strange, and Mephisto. I'm going to check out some back issues of this run, as well as take a gander at the Venom Circle of Four storyline. The art was good and consistent enough that I didn't notice when the art changed twice.
Twice. I like that.
It was a comma.
Yeah. The art changed twice. So ends another chapter of Ghost Rider.
Is that the final issue?
Yeah. Yep.
Axe fell on... Couple books.
I wonder if Ghost Rider has more final issues than any other title.
It might.
Ghost Rider, Hawkman,
yeah,
Aquaman,
so Wonder Woman. Those are the books.
Wonder Woman.
Those are the books that you guys enjoyed in the iFanboy community. Go to ifanboy.com/comics, get the full list, and write a review, and you can get one on the show if we so deem it. So
slipping in under the wire is the March book of the month, which is Wally Wood's EC Stories, the artist edition. From IDW Publishing, and I assume I'm the only one who actually got their hands on this.
So what happened was I had one in my hands, mm-hmm. and what happened was my store was short copies, and my Isotope James said, if you want it, it's yours, but if you don't, I got other customers. And I said, you know, you can sell it somebody else, and I turned it down.
So you saw it.
Luckily, it wasn't raining that day, so you didn't find yourself in need of shelter.
Yeah, no, exactly. I was able to read through the entire thing and look at it. And my thing with the artist edition is that I need to have some emotional connection to it. And while I love Wally Wood, and I think Wally Wood is great, and from the standpoint of the comics history and stuff like that, I think he's important. This is the kind of thing where, like, when I do my need versus want kind of thing, it's not something I need.
Sure.
So.
We should mention these artist editions are books that IDW has been putting out. There's been 4 so far, and they are basically art books. They are reprinting the original art pages in color reprints, which is important, of the original pages. So you've got a Rocketeer book and a Simonson Thor book and a Romita Spider-Man book and now a Wally Wood EC book. And, you know, I think there's probably a fair amount of readers or listeners or viewers who don't necessarily know who Wally Wood is or why he's important or understand the importance of EC Comics he's a legendary figure in the comics industry, and EC books were legendary, and this is a loving tribute to that era. And the thing is, I might have the emotional connection to Wally Wood stuff as I do to the other 3 books, but to pore over these pages and see the storytelling and the detail in the art and the work use of shadows, because Wally Wood is famous for his shadow work, and just see the notes on the side of the pages, and you really are transported back. And I really focus on the experiential side of it in my review, in that it really envelops you into this, it's almost like time travel, in that you're just really sort of sucked back into that time, and you feel like you're holding the original pages, and you feel like you're, you know, part of that history. And it's, you know, for an art fan, I think these books that IDW is putting out are wonderful.
Yeah, and I mean, you will never own a page of Wally Wood art.
No, never. Yeah,
and so like this is the closest you can get, and it's in the, you know, the, and it's full size. And that's what's really interesting about that is that and what Josh joked about and what you mentioned is that it's enormous, because back,
it's almost two feet.
Yeah, because back in the day, those are the size of boards that the artist drew on. They drew on these really huge oversized boards, and then they would get shrunk down in the process and stuff like that. The previous ones that came out, the John Romita and the Rocketeer and stuff like that, are closer to the size boards that exist now. Do you know why art boards are the size they are now?
It's FedEx.
Yep, because the FedEx boxes dictated how big the art board should be. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
Yes, I think that's crazy. But
it's interesting in that, you remember, Josh probably knows this, when you started with the iPhone, then you held an iPad, suddenly the iPhone just felt tiny, and there was no going back. Well, when these IDW books started coming out, they were like, these things are huge. How do you even deal? And then this one, I got this one, and suddenly the other ones don't seem so big. Like, they just seem manageable. But it's a gigantic book, and it really is. And it's a high-end book. It's expensive. It really is for the sort of real hardcore art aficionado.
And this is important, is that I think a lot of people don't know who Wally Wood is.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've maybe have heard the name or whatever. But if you look at just look at the cover. If you were a fan of Fear Agent at all, or you wanted to look, you like Tony Moore's art. I mean, this is a direct antecedent of that. He defined a style that sort of space, you know, sci-fi. Really detailed. In fact, if you look at the work, it doesn't age like a lot of work from that era does. The other side of it is that Wally Wood's also really well known. I'm sorry, I'm going to give you a little history lesson because I think it's important if you haven't been thinking about looking at it, is that Wally Wood is famous partially for his 22 panels that always work. These are gospel in the comic book art world. You can look it up and Google Wally Wood's 22 panels that always work, and it's how to make a comic book in one single document, basically. It's how to do storytelling. This guy is completely seminal.
Larry Hama was his assistant, mm-hmm. and his art assistant, and then he brought that 22 panel thing to Marvel, and they got passed around, and the bullpen, then it went outside of Marvel. It's basically you know everyone is in comics.
Everyone. Knows. Yeah. And it's one of those things like I spend a lot of time talking about how important Jack Kirby is. Well, you know, the next rung down is Eisner, Wally Wood, you know, and a whole bunch of other names. The other thing about Wally Wood, though, is that he was kind of an unhappy, disturbed dude. He died really young. He had a stroke when he was in his early 50s. He died a few years after that. It's kind of a sad story. But what he's left behind is this amazing art legacy in a very tiny industry. There's just not a lot of people around to appreciate him anymore, but his influence can't be denied at all. And this book, which I don't have because I just like – I can talk about all this. I was like, I can't afford it, or I can't justify it, or because it's a heck of a purchase. But this book is a loving tribute to him, and it's the one right now that I'm like, oh, I really want to have that. But I'm worried that it would be sitting in that box wrapped up with my Walt Simonson one that I haven't really looked at.
Well, if you've got $400, you can get one on eBay or Amazon.
No,
they reprinted. They are reprinting them. Yeah, but you can get a first printing for $400.
That's so not important.
Yeah. Because they apparently were really surprised by the demand for this particular one, and they struck a deal. Originally, all these books were supposed to be one-time only, you know, tributes. You know, they had made deals with the estates, people who are dead, and they went back to – they got an agreement to go back and print on this one. It's not just sci-fi. There's war stories in here. It's a great
smattering of his work.
Covers the whole gamut, and it just really blows you away the amount of detail that went into these pages, and it sort of puts the modern day comic book artist on notice. Yeah. And that the amount of stuff they were able to come up with, and it's just gorgeous. If you get a chance to look at it, just do.
Yeah, totally, totally worth it. And if you're at a con, swing by IDW's booth or try to find one just to see it, just to see the immense size of it. And it's so great.
Fishbowl space helmet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. So yeah, so go to ifanboy.com. You can read Connor's full book of the month review on it, and it's funny that we mentioned that because it's like the artist edition. Like for the book of the month, we try to recommend books that you guys in the audience can go buy, and we were really hesitant on this because the artist editions, because they sell out instantly and there's only one printing. But now that they're doing the reprinting of this, and you actually can go get it if you can afford it, it's something worth, I think, noting. It's really important.
So. I think John Romita's still in print. Didn't sell out yet, and then they're, you know, the next up is they're doing Daredevil and Mazzucchelli, and then they're doing Gru Aragonis, and they're doing, I think they're still doing the Will Eisner Spirit one.
They still are. I already pre-ordered the Mazzucchelli Daredevil, the Miller Daredevil, and that one's gonna be beautiful.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. So yeah, go to fanboy.com, read the full review. So one quick email, well, not a quick email, but one email before we wrap up. We're going to skip voicemails as well because we went long talking about the book of the month. But this email comes in from John, which he admits is a long-winded question, but bear with him, because he thinks it's important about anybody concerned with the state of Marvel Comics editorial direction, which we all are.
It's a very important way to open.
Yes. John says,
talk about the state of the Marvel editorial.
John says, basically, I've been wondering if there's any potential for Avengers vs. X-Men to actually be good. Indeed, most of us have come to have low expectations for events, especially ones with as generic and shallow a premise as Avengers vs. X-Men. But consequently, I actually think that some of us may soon find ourselves pleasantly surprised by a much-hyped, quote-unquote, universe-smashing event could be fun. Could Avengers vs. X-Men be this event? Doubt it. At best, Avengers vs. X-Men will yield some fantastic art and satisfying issues by rotating writers. And as a whole, it can even be some great escapist fun. And honestly, despite how others feel, I'm totally cool with that. A bit excited, even. But still, more than anything, I'm worried about how this event could affect the Marvel books I'm currently enjoying. Which finally brings me to my question. Could Avengers vs. X-Men possibly prove to be the event that is simultaneously fun while also delivering a worthwhile shakeup to the Marvel Universe? Or is it troubling, meddling influence already a foregone conclusion? For instance, the X line of books is currently fantastic standing. So outside of delivering resolution to the arc of Hope Summers, most X fans probably don't want AVX to alter the current status of the X titles. Meanwhile, the Avengers are in need of a shakeup after Bendis' overlong reign of that part of the Marvel U. So there really is a great potential for this event to lead into a new and interesting direction for the Avengers. But is there any freaking chance that Marvel can handle all this effectively? Am I the only one who feels that this quote-unquote event feels like a particularly dangerous play by Marvel? Fascinating, John.
There are a lot of questions.
First
of all, there's no such thing as a shakeup.
Yeah,
that's a marketing term. It doesn't happen. They say it is. It's going to be the same afterwards. You know, in the same. I think at this point, you know, as long as we've been doing this, these events are a Michael Bay movie that are supposed to be about fun. If you like this kind of thing, then you will enjoy it. If it's not for you, that would be a person like me. Then you're not. So don't expect more out of it than you're going to. If you go in expecting this, this is going to be it. This is going to be the thing. This is going to be like Watchmen now. Then you'll probably be disappointed every time. But if you don't learn from getting burned over and over, that's not your thing.
Yeah.
You know, who's to blame?
I mean, it's curious to see what's going to happen because I feel as if there's that Marvel is putting a lot of their eggs in the AVX basket.
They definitely are.
Yeah, they definitely are, which we know that, which they have to. Because that's what they're doing. That's their approach. But you know, with Bendis leaving Avengers towards the end of the year, with Hickman leaving Fantastic Four towards the end of this year, that we already know that stuff. You know, we've reported on it. I've written some speculation around it. You gotta wonder if they're gonna use this to launch something bigger than this. You know, there have been rumors in the industry of is Marvel going to respond to DC in the New 52 and all that sort of stuff. You know, I don't think they're going to reset continuity the way DC did. I think there'll be ritualistic mass suicide if that happened. but DC did it and survived. So who knows? Like we don't know. No matter what you make of Avengers vs. X-Men, I'm curious as we get closer to, it's going to be July, I think, when we start to get an idea of what, because that's when the solicits come out, and we're going to get an idea of what post Avengers vs. X-Men is going to be like. And honestly, you know, I think it can go in either direction.
The solicits are the way that you want to find out, though. Yep.
Yeah,
I think that's
exactly.
That's the best way to go.
Yeah, that's a great. Yeah.
Let me ask you. Experience the story in the pages when you can just look at the solicits 3 months ahead of time and find out how it all ends.
Yeah.
And I haven't actually talked to either of you guys about this. Now, I mean, Ron, you're going to buy it. I know.
Yeah.
Connor, where are you on this?
I'm excited for it. It looks like it's, I mean.
Really?
You can't not get excited for it if you are going to enjoy these books. You have to buy into it. If you're not going to if you're going to, you know, I did the same thing with Fear Itself. I was excited for Fear Itself. I want it to be good. If I don't want it to be good, then why am I reading these things every week?
Yep, yeah. And I know a lot of people who have the same opinion as you in terms of being excited. Like, people are excited for it.
And the thing is, it may not be good, and I'll just stop reading like I did Fear Itself. If I don't like it, I'll just stop. But I have to go into it excited because all these superhero universes are anchored on these events. So if they're not any good, if I feel like I don't want any part of them, I probably shouldn't be reading the books.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to read any of the books.
The thing is, the talent level is top-notch. You've got Hickman and Aaron and Bendis and... Yeah. And you know,
and Romita and Coypel and
if they can't put it together, then maybe it can't be done. But if I have to, you know, I'm as huge of a Jason Aaron fan as you can get, and Hickman's Fantastic Four run's been amazing. And if these guys can't do it, and if I'm not a creator guy, then there's no faith in those guys. I have the faith that they're going to be good. Now I may not come together, but that's the risk you take with anything.
Yeah.
Hmm. Nice.
So good questions there, John, and time will tell. We'll see. But I mean, I'm with Connor. I hope it's good, and I hope that they do something with it. And because I honestly think Marvel needs to do something. They're in that position again.
I've been saying it for a while. Something's got to shake it up because these guys have been on these books forever.
Exactly. Okay, so if you have a question, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Always good to hear from y'all. If you need more comic book goodness, go listen to iFanboy Don't Miss, which is a podcast that comes out just about usually every Monday, where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out. We're skipping this week because of the Emerald City Comic Con. It's all kind of crazy and that sort of thing. So no Don't Miss this week, but we'll be back next week with another book that you absolutely need to pick up when you go to the store. And you can subscribe to that on iTunes or on ifanboy.com.
I think there's going to be a Make Comics podcast this week.
Okay.
I think. If there isn't, there will be definitely one after that. But if you're not aware of it, I'm pretty sure. Don't forget I even said anything, everyone. It's fine. that's marketing. The Make Comics podcast is a little show that I do with Andy Schmidt from Comics Experience, former editor from Marvel and IDW. And we talk about issues pertaining to making comics across the board, whether you're an artist, writer or just interested in how that all gets put together and that the thinking about it. If you have questions for the show, you can send them to info@comicsexperience.com and put Make Comics Podcast in the subject line, and that we'll know that is for that, because we're going to start taking a couple of questions because we're already out of ideas. That's not true. That's every Wednesday morning. We try to get one of those out. A little short show, fun stuff.
You can find that on iTunes or on ifanboy.com, where you can also find Ron's Pick of the Week review. You can find my Book of the Month review, but by the time you hear this, you'll probably find Ron's new Book of the Month review. But you can find either one. It's fine.
You can go to the current Book of the Month and look in the archive. It's all there. Yeah. Don't worry.
You can listen. You can see all the discussion. There'll be discussion every day in the comic industry, what's happening. When next Wednesday, AVX number one comes out, so there'll be lots to talk about that. Go to ifanboy.com for all your comic needs. You can go to ifanboy.com/about, find our social network links, be our friends online, and find all the staff listings. Everything you need to know is happening at ifanboy.com.
And as I mentioned, you can get in touch with us by calling our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS, 1-888-326-2697, or shoot us an email at contact@ifanboy.com, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook and all that fun stuff.
You are our marketing army, and you clearly would do it better than me. If you like us, you can go to iTunes and write a review for this show or any of the shows that we do. We really appreciate that. The more that are there, the easier it is to stand up against the invading hordes and onslaughts of podcasts that there are out there. You know, we've been in this game a while. We've seen a lot of people come and go, and we got to keep them off the sides of the ship. You know what I'm saying? So definitely keep those reviews going. And more important than that is your word of mouth and your links and your sharing on social networks and your just talking about stuff that you liked on the site, no matter what of it that it is. We really appreciate that, and it's integral to keeping things going. So thank you for that.
Cool. Awesome. So good to be back. I'm heading off to Seattle now.
We should mention that next week is the writer's show.
Oh, yes, yes.
So we won't be around for Avengers X-Men number one.
Don't tell them that. We should sell it like one of those issues that has a fill-in. It doesn't say on the cover.
So we'll be back with the annual writer shows next week, which we always enjoy. So
I'm kidding. They're funny.
Yes.
All right. So until sometime in the future, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I am Josh. Thank you for listening.